Donald Trump edges closer to his party's nomination for president as Ted Cruz leaves the race. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9. Make sure to subscribe to the daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. And you can now watch the show video on demand with our partner TVJax.com. And just ahead, the Florida-based founder of the Never Trump movement joins the show. Your calls are already coming in for GOP consultant Rick Wilson. Get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, it's Lyme Disease Awareness Month. Provocative new research on how that disease is spread. We'll tell you about it. Plus, you don't know Jack, but you will soon. We'll tell you about the new magazine in Jacksonville, Jack, on newsstands this week. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, Donald Trump is closing in on the Republican nomination for president after winning last night's Indiana primary. Ted Cruz has dropped out of the race, leaving just Trump and Ohio Governor John Kasich still standing on the GOP side. For the Democrats, Bernie Sanders won the state of Indiana last night, but Hillary Clinton still has a commanding delegate lead in that contest. Mr. Trump is emerging as the standard bearer of a Republican Party that has been traumatized and torn apart by his campaign. And one of the loudest Republican voices speaking out against Trump is right here in Florida. GOP strategist and consultant Rick Wilson is the founder of the Never Trump movement, opposing Donald Trump for the Republican nomination for president. Wilson is on the line now from the Tallahassee area with his thoughts about the race. The first time we've had him on the show. Rick Wilson, a pleasure to have you on the program. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And we're already getting your calls for GOP consultant Rick Wilson. What are your questions for the founder of the Never Trump movement? Get on the line now. 549-2937, that's 549-2937, or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show or weigh in on our Facebook page. From the very beginning of Donald Trump's campaign, Rick, you have been perhaps his most vocal opponent on the Republican side. Your thoughts now that Trump appears to be the presumptive Republican nominee?
Well, the fact is that Donald Trump had a lot of help getting here. From a weak and feckless party infrastructure that didn't exercise leadership in the beginning to bump him out. It had a lot of help from a complicit, quote-unquote, conservative news media that monetized this thing and to drive ratings and clicks and eyeballs. And the fact of the matter is that we've had a party right now that divided itself in large measure after the 2010 Tea Party surge between folks who were fundamental conservatives and constitutional conservatives and folks who decided we were going to try to run this, purist, all-or-nothing kind of party that sort of was Ted Cruz was the avatar of. And you can't out-crazy crazy. And so once you start saying we're going to be we're going to build the wall higher, we're going to make the country more punitive and we're going to be more crazy every day, you can't outbid Donald Trump on that. None of that stuff you can't get around Donald Trump when it comes to, exaggeration. So that the party coming to accept that kind of rhetoric and style, is one of the chemical changes we've had this year that combined with those other factors have made it very difficult to stop him. And we also had a donor community that was petrified of this guy from the very beginning. I'm petrified of him in the beginning. A lot of them laughed when we said, oh, it's Donald Trump. We've got to be careful about this. And, I had one New York billionaire, major donor, seven-figure donor to, a lot of the different political PACs over the years. And he said, Trump's not a billionaire. I'm a billionaire. The guy's not really rich. He's not really this. He's not really that. He's a jerk. He's an idiot. These guys that know him from New York, treat him with derision. But the message that Trump was self-funding, supposedly, and that he was an independent, from all the power structure and everything else, it resonated with a lot of folks, and we are where we are right now.
It's 549-2937 to connect with GOP consultant and strategist Rick Wilson, founder of the Never Trump movement. And from the beginning, you said you've opposed Trump because he betrays conservative principles and because you also consider him, and I'm quoting from a piece you wrote, that he lacks the temperament, judgment, and even basic sanity to be placed as steward over the nuclear codes and the U.S. military.
Mm-hmm.
now that it appears that he will, in fact, face off against either Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders for president, from the beginning, you vowed you will never fall in line and unite behind him. So given your choices now, and for Republicans like you who opposed Trump, who will you support for president? Will you just sit out this election?
Well, look, at this point, I'm willing to look at a conservative third-party option, even though that person may not be able to pull this thing off and win. I'm certainly willing to look at options for a conservative third party candidate. And I'm also willing to undervote if I have to. And not fill in that line on my ballot.
Vote for other candidates, but not president.
Yes, correct. I mean, look, I've been for Republican. I'm 52 years old. I was raised by basically hippie parents. I was a strange Republican child that popped out in the Reagan era. And so,
were you like Alex P. Keaton Rick? Is that what you're saying?
A little bit. but I have never voted for a Democrat in my life. Not one time, not ever, not a single line. Even when there were Republican candidates on the ballot, I wasn't crazy about. I've never crossed party lines in any partisan election. Okay, but the fact of the matter is, Donald Trump is not a conservative. He's not even a Republican, particularly. This is a guy who also, as I've written many times, does not display temperament or judgment or any of the behavioral characteristics that a country should hope for in their leader. Just being strong, just being loud, just being quick, you know, with the insult is not the standard by which presidential leadership, in my opinion, should be judged. And while that is amusing, and while it is a perfectly, you know, suitable role for a reality TV star, this isn't a reality TV show. This is our future. This is our country. These are the constitutional principles that conservatives and Republicans ostensibly abide by, being abandoned in order for folks to join the Trump cult.
And you have called it a cult of personality. You've also written that you see similarities between Donald Trump supporters and the rise of Barack Obama in 2007, 2008. You described that also as a cult of personality. Let me ask you, you say that he's betraying Republican principles. What would you say to those who disagree with that view, who would argue that, in fact, he is tapping into what the majority of Republican voters say they want, not necessarily lower taxes and limited government, but much more of an aggressive nationalism and as you've even written, even a hint of fascism in the principles and ideas that he's talking about?
Well, that's the irony, that the majority of Republican voters haven't wanted that. The majority of Republican voters, 65% of the people who've cast a vote in this election so far, have voted against Donald Trump. And so, and when you start to probe down into, you know, how severe that people want to actually be on things that Trump, including Republicans, when you start to do polling and survey work on the things that Trump wants, while there may be some majorities and pluralities on these things, it is by no means a universal characterization of the Republican Party as simply nationalist. There's an element that is being lost here about fundamental conservatism, and that is that we are profoundly a movement about philosophy and ideals and the natural rights that we are given by God, not a party of men and their mob. And this is it may sound like a little bit of an esoteric argument now, and a little bit of a sort of like drawing room argument now, but the decision on what type of party you have should be motivated by what type of philosophy you have. And right now he has managed to hack the GOP essentially for this nativist and nationalist fraction of the party that frankly, you know, seems very willing to toss aside the Constitution, toss aside all the fundamental conservative principles that we claim to live by, and replace it with a charismatic strongman.
Let's go to your calls, emails, and tweets right now for GOP consultant Rick Wilson on the line from Tallahassee, discussing his opposition to Donald Trump. Wilson, the founder of the Never Trump movement on social media, Lots of calls at 549-2937. Paul is in Orange Park. Hi, Paul. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning, Melissa.
Go ahead.
With all due respect, I think it's unacceptable and unpatriotic to, refuse to vote for someone because they don't have the right party symbol on their shoulder. We have to vote against Trump, even if we do it as a write-in vote, for Cruz or Kasich. But I think that Hillary's going to be a whole lot less of a loose cannon, than Donald Trump. Can you imagine Donald Trump talking to President Putin of Russia? That's not going to go well. We already have a surrogate war in Iran with Putin backing Assad, and we're backing the rebels that are fighting Assad. We have to do everything we can to keep Trump from getting elected, and not voting for a presidential candidate is one way to throw away an opportunity to keep that from happening.
All right, Paul, thanks. Go ahead, Rick.
Well, Paul, let me say this, and I've said this from the beginning. No one should mistake my opposition for Donald Trump with either A, some affection for Hillary of any kind, or B, some sort of like secret coded message that I'm a squishy liberal underneath my Republican exterior.
I think, and don't a lot of Republican voters accuse you of that, Rick?
Very frequently, yes, and it's because they can't use Google for one thing. I go back against the Clintons, back to. Listen, I was in the first Bush administration, in the 88 to 93 Bush administration, and I've fought against the Clintons since the 92 campaign. I was the strategist for Rudy Giuliani's campaign against Hillary Clinton before he got prostate cancer and dropped out of the race. I've been punching up against the Clintons for my entire career. I understand these people very well. I understand the deep strain of immorality and the deep strain of banality that informs all their political decisions. My reason for not voting for Hillary is as principled as my reason for not voting for Trump. I think she lacks the fundamental values and the fundamental judgment to be a good president. I don't think she'd be a bad president in the same way Trump would be a bad president. I think she would make a lot of mistakes, but they wouldn't necessarily be the same kind of mistakes Trump will make. He will make mistakes from ignorance and from impulsiveness and from cupidity, rather than from having the wrong philosophical ideas. She'll make mistakes because I think she has the wrong ideas and the wrong leadership characteristics to be president.
Will you vote for Hillary Clinton?
No, under no circumstances. I've said this repeatedly. Never Trump does not mean always Hillary.
All right, let's go. Sure, lots of calls for Rick Wilson. Let's go to John in Jacksonville. Hi, John, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, beautiful. This is Hancock, John Hancock.
Hi there, John. Go ahead.
Good morning, sir. Mr. Wilson, I appreciate your time. With all due respect, I in Jacksonville, the LGBT community are still considered an unprotected class of people in 2016. They decided this year again they're not even going to discuss it. And then I hear fascism in reference to Trump. And you're hearing the anxiety in my voice. This is how I live every day. But the first to be marked in Germany were the LGBT people. Are we really on that same cycle to have more to fear from him or Hillary or Republicans? Or am I going to go backwards in my human rights if Trump becomes president of this country?
All right. Thanks for the call, John. Rick.
Well, I honestly don't think that there's that Trump has any particular views about anything in the social in the cluster of social issues that have informed some of the discussion in the past.
You don't think he holds core convictions on social issues?
I think Trump is a social liberal. But I don't think he believes in anything in particular when it comes to these matters. I think Trump's views on these things would be malleable and you know, just like everything else about him, sort of impulsive and of the moment how he feels. So I don't necessarily think that anyone's going to be on the Trump side particularly engaged on that. I mean, I think Mrs. Clinton's positions on these matters are clear enough, and it's a matter for, you know, for individual conscience at that point.
James along the Trout River. Hi, James. How are you today? Go ahead.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good morning.
Let me just say this. I'm a lifelong Democrat, but I find it reprehensible that anyone would say they would not vote for any reason. I just don't understand that. Secondly, I think the Republican Party has turned our election process into a gang mentality, us against them, and that's very wrong. Everybody should vote, and I have voted for Republicans, believe it or not. So I can't remember the name of the gentleman that you're speaking with, but I just don't understand.
It's Rick Wilson, and he's saying that he will probably support a third party candidate, actually.
I could go along with that, but anybody who says they won't vote, I just do not understand. Because, and I have voted across party lines, and I am a lifelong Democrat, and I have voted for Republicans, Reagan, Nixon, I did.
Okay, so, all right. Yeah, thanks for that call, James. Lots of calls coming in from all over our listening area. Pat on Fleming Island. Hi, Pat. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning, Melissa, and to your guest. I'm sort of fascinated that the Republicans didn't see this coming. Their actions over the last 8 years of opposing the president without any idea, with just saying no to everything, they have created a void for somebody like Trump. And it's their lack of leadership, other than saying no, other than putting up a roadblock to everything, created this. And the American people are so starved for somebody to lead them in the right direction that they're going after what is essentially a game show host. And the Republicans sit back and say, we want to stop this. And once again, it's just a stop. They don't have an answer to it. It's more of the same of no. They sound like a bunch of little crybabies. Now, I am not a Trump guy by any stretch of the imagination, but certainly these people in the Republican Party who have been starved for somebody with an idea, starved with somebody who will get out front and lead and not just say no, how can they be so shocked that this happened? I guess that's my
okay.
Point.
Thanks, Pat. Now, you know, Rick, here's a comment on our Facebook page as well from Paula saying, after years of running the party with partisan dog whistles of one kind or another, what did Republicans think was going to happen? What are your thoughts about those watching this play out who say, well, the GOP in some sense brought this situation, this division on themselves?
Well, look, the fact of the matter is all political parties have internal schisms and internal divisions. The Democrats are just as fragmented in many ways. You're looking at the you know, the Clinton wing versus the Sanders Warren wing of the Democratic Party.
Sure.
You know, so all parties have internal ideological tensions and divisions. And frankly, you know, part of being a conservative is that you're not trying to chase every momentary impulse. You're not trying to chase every political or legislative fashion of the moment. And in some ways, being a conservative is saying no to the expansion and growth of the state and the expansion and growth of government, because we view government as the least effective measure to improve a method by which to improve human life. And so a lot of the opposition that has characterized the last 8 years is principled opposition to terrible ideas and principled opposition to Obama's leadership in ways that we have found both objectionable from a political, philosophical, and policy spectrum. So none of these things that just saying no isn't the cause of Donald Trump. The other part of this thing is that, you know, we do have a quote unquote conservative media now that has been very complicit in this, combined with Trump's status as a reality television star for the last 25 years, universal name ID, the media's decision to cover him 24/7 at the expense of every other candidate in the field. So these structural things that have happened that put Trump in this position are frankly more important than some of the philosophical divisions inside the GOP.
And speaking of the GOP, here's a tweet for you, Rick, from James. What should Reince Priebus, who chairs the Republican Party, what should he have done, and should he resign?
Well, listen, I like Reince personally. We get along well personally. Unfortunately, once he went to Trump Tower to kiss Donald Trump's ring, the power relationship between the two men could never be the same. And he would never recover his stature in being able to deal with Trump after that moment. If I were the chairman, if I were the chairman, Trump wouldn't be the nominee right now, because we would have basically disqualified the guy in the beginning of this process rather than the end. You know, he's a lifelong Democrat. He's a lifelong, you know, donor to people like Bill and Hillary Clinton and Nancy Pelosi, et cetera. We would have made that clear. This was going to be difficult. When the shenanigans started, we would have said, you know, keep this up, you're not going to be on the debate stage, et cetera. But that's an alternate history, unfortunately. I believe personally that Reince will stick this thing out. If I were Reince Priebus, what I would do right now is refocus every single bit of energy in the Republican Party on trying to maintain our Senate majority, and on trying to maintain our House majority, and on trying to rebuild state party apparatuses and structures.
Do you think Donald Trump will damage Republican contest down ballot?
Absolutely. There's no question about it. We've seen it in the polling. You know, we went in the field last year in April, last year, in Colorado, Florida, and Nevada, specifically looking at Republican questions of Republican voter performance with Hispanics. In each of those states, the numbers were pretty similar. They weren't great, but they weren't awful. They were in the mid to high 30s, okay, in terms of voter intention. They asked Hispanics, who do you plan to vote for, the generic Republican or the generic Democrat? And in those states, like I said, they were in the mid to high 30s, 35, 36, 37, somewhere in there, right? We went back into the field in March of this year and asked the same question. And these were specifically for the U.S. Senate races, okay? We went back in the field this spring, and the number was in the low to mid-teens. And so we started probing it. We started asking, why are you opposed to what changed your mind in the space of this year? And the universal answer, they didn't say policy or anything else, was Donald Trump. Because Hispanic voters have decided, they've taken Donald Trump at his word, that he thinks that they're rapists and he thinks that they're criminals, and this has had a lasting and major impact on how they view the party. And you know, he also alienates women voters in a way that is equally marked and equally profound.
And let me jump in. And let me just jump in, Rick, mm-hmm. because lots of folks waiting on hold to connect with you.
Sure.
Let me get Elaine in. Elaine on the South Side. Go ahead, Elaine.
Hi. I just have a real quick see what this gentleman's opinion is. I am kind of on a historian buff of World War II, and I definitely see a similarity in the his statement about fascists, slightly fascist with Trump. My question would be, is it something that we as population are not noticing in ourselves, what the Germans allowed, or I don't know if allowed would be the way to say it, but just let come about where we're so exclusive, so based only nationally. I don't know if I've stated that
okay,
well
Elaine.
Enough.
Yeah, I get your point. Okay, thanks for that call. Okay, so Rick Wilson, will the Never Trump movement continue, and how will you approach the next several months of this campaign?
Well, the Never Trump movement is certainly going to continue. There are many. I mean, I have to tell you, there was not a lot of rest last night because my phone was blowing up until about 4 a.m. from folks reaching out from across the country, saying essentially, "What do we do now? How do we try to rectify this? How do we try to reorient? And how do we start looking at some ways to save Republicans up and down the ballot that are now going to need saving?" Because Donald Trump will be at the head of the ballot. So the Never Trump movement is going to continue. And the fact of the matter is, you know, never means never. And none of us who have looked at this problem and who have studied this problem, you know, did this lightly. None of us want to be in a position where we're opposing the nominee of our party. But the nominee of our party is not qualified in any dimension to be the nominee. And the fact of the matter is his ideas, philosophies, and temperament are all dangerous to the future of not only the party, but of the country. So as I say to people, you know, I know principle is in short supply lately, but this is one thing we have to stick with. We have to maintain on this one because the alternative is just too grim to contemplate. So we're going to stick with this and we're going to keep pushing on this. And the fact of the matter is, you know, our country's in a period of a tremendous political flux right now, and you know we're probably seeing the beginning of a sort of reformation period, where the Republican Party is going to either going to reform itself in a fundamental way into you know a party that gets back to its conservative principles again, or it's going to schism into the white nationalist segment of the party, which is you know a lot smaller than people think. But in a primary, it was big enough to be influential. Or we're going to be in a position where the Democrats are going to end up in a period of dominance, and Republicans have to learn the lesson the hard way, and claw our way back with the same sort of reformation process.
Okay. Well, it's fascinating to speak with you, and thank you so much for lending your thoughts to the show today. That's Rick Wilson on the line from Tallahassee, GOP media consultant and campaign operative and founder of the Never Trump movement on social media. And much more still ahead, meantime, on this program later, Getting to Know Jack. We'll tell you about the new local magazine launching this week. But up next, provocative new research on Lyme disease, what it means for patients and physicians. That's after this.
Legal and political segments on First Coast Connect, brought to you by Farrah and Farrah.
The number of heroin-related deaths on the First Coast has more than doubled in a year. Law enforcement is pledging to clamp down on sellers as they urge users to seek help for their powerful addiction. In Community Thread, The Opioid Epidemic, we'll take a look at the factors drawing people toward the needle and the strategies our community is using to fight back. Log on to wjct.org/events/community-thread to submit your questions or to RSVP to be a part of our studio audience on May 10th.
Turns out that thinking like a computer doesn't necessarily make you a robot.
Surprisingly, there's actually a lot that we can learn from computer science about making better decisions in our own daily lives.
I'm Kai Rizdal. What you can learn from algorithms in real life. We'll have the numbers from Wall Street and the rest of the day's business news next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
Give mom the perfect gift for Mother's Day. A ticket to Girls' Day Out. A day just for her to refresh, rejuvenate, and celebrate good health and wellness. September 17th at the Hyatt Hotel. The day begins with breakfast, followed by exciting speakers that will engage and empower. A great lunch, swag bag, and much more. Tickets are $40. Log on to wjct.org/girlsdayout and get your tickets today.
The small town of Austin, Indiana, is still dealing with an HIV outbreak fueled by prescription drug abuse. Part of the problem? Getting access to medications that help people quit, like Suboxone.
The Suboxone is what most of our people want. They're actually buying it illegally on the street to try to quit themselves. That's how desperate they are.
Revisiting Austin, Indiana later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Welcome back to the show. Well, it's a global epidemic with cases on virtually every continent. And Lyme disease is a maddening malady with more than 300,000 new cases in this country diagnosed each year. It's stubborn and mysterious. It can mimic other conditions like multiple sclerosis, fibromyalgia, or Parkinson's disease. It's tough to treat. And there's controversy in the medical community about not only how to treat Lyme disease, but also how it's spread. May is Lyme Disease Awareness Month, and here with more, we welcome Dr. Carrie Clark, Professor of Epidemiology and Environmental Health at UNF. Good morning.
Good morning.
Dr. Shirley Hartman, a local physician treating Jacksonville area Lyme disease patients. Good morning, Doctor.
Good morning.
Also with us, attorney Melissa Bell, president of the Florida Lyme Disease Association, and she's also the creator of the Lyme Disease Challenge. Melissa, you brought a plate of limes to the studio. We're going to get into those in just a minute. Good to see you.
Thank you. Yes, we're going to take a bite out of lime.
That's right, literally. And I don't know, I can't believe I'm doing this without salt and tequila, but you guys are going to make me do it. Okay, let's begin with Dr. Carrie Clark. Dr. Clark, several years ago you appeared on this program and revealed some new research you had conducted at UNF that really shook up our website. The most traffic story on WJCTnews.org for years was about your research on Lyme disease. Why is your research so provocative and so controversial?
Well, part of the reason is that I'm studying Lyme disease in the southern United States, and there's a pervasive belief that Lyme is very rare in the South. But people who live in the South know that it's not. There are thousands and thousands of patients out there who are looking for help, looking for research that will drive changes in the system for diagnosing and treating Lyme. So those people are looking for help, and that's why your website crashed, because they're interested. And, you know, we're doing some grassroots, bottom-up research to try to help people.
In fact, you found that Lyme can, in fact, be transmitted through Lone Star ticks in the southern U.S., which is the controversial point.
This is a very controversial point. We haven't proven absolutely that Lone Star ticks can transmit, but the circumstantial evidence is really building for this. It's the most common, aggressive human-biting tick in this area, and we do find evidence of the bacteria in Lone Star ticks. So we think that we can connect these dots meaningfully, and that eventually the evidence will prove that they are the important vector down here.
In the meantime, Dr. Hartman, what does this mean for patients who really suffer and struggle with this disease and even have trouble finding clinicians like you to treat them?
The problems are that Lyme is difficult to diagnose. In a series that we did in-house, about 15% of people met the CDC's criteria for the diagnosis of Lyme that we felt had Lyme disease. So it's hard to diagnose people, and you have to use clinical grounds and response to treatment as well as laboratory testing. I generally say that people who have pain, brain, and Lyme should be looking at the possibility of Lyme, pain being nerve pain, muscle pain, joint pain, other nervous system problems, brain things like multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's, vertigo, tinnitus, brain fog, Lou Gehrig's disease, and Lyme, people with chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, autoimmune diseases, rheumatoid arthritis, lupus. People who have pain, brain, and Lyme should be looking at the possibility that they could have Lyme and should run testing for it. And be liberal in terms of interpreting that testing. Sometimes people who even meet CDC criteria are told they don't have Lyme.
And they might very well have. They have to prove that they have it, right?
It's really a challenge. You know, Sometimes people will have seen multiple doctors and be told every time that they don't have Lyme. And yet when they are treated for it, they do well and they improve.
So maddening. So Melissa Bell, you're president of the Florida Lyme Disease Association. And in order to raise much needed awareness, you've created the Lyme Disease Challenge. You've brought some lime wedges with you here to the studio. Tell us all about this.
The Lyme Disease Challenge is a global grassroots effort to spread Lyme disease awareness and raise funds for research and doctor training through the International Lyme and Associated Diseases Society Educational Fund. We saw in the Lyme community that there's so many sick patients, but we did not have a common voice. So we formed a group, began organizing. We actually have, it was a group of five moms that started things from all over the country. And working together, we were able to get the campaign to go viral last year. There are three easy steps to the campaign. Uh-huh. One, you take a bite out of Lyme and either capture it on video or a photo. You share a fact about Lyme disease, and then you share it, pass it on social media, and challenge three other people.
Okay, here's the moment of truth. Hand me one of those Lyme wedges. I'm going to take the Lyme disease challenge, everybody. Now, what do I have to do? Just bite into this? Bite into the lime?
Yes. Give us your best sour face selfie.
Oh, gosh. Okay, here I go. Oh, gosh. I've never done that in my life. Oh, man. I hope I struck a blow for Lyme disease awareness because right now I need a drink of water. But we will stream this video through our partners, TVJax.com, later today. I'll share it on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn. And let's challenge others to do the same. Take the Lyme disease challenge because Dr. Clark, sorry, I'm still having a little trouble talking. May is Lyme Disease Awareness Month. This is the month to really push this information. Of course, you want to do this every month, but May is Lyme Disease Awareness Month.
Yes, right. And this is a time when tick activity is at its peak.
Yeah.
So the number of people being exposed to ticks and being bitten by ticks right now is tremendous.
Okay, let's take a call for our Lyme disease group here. It's David in Oceanway. Hi, David. You're on the air. Good morning, David.
Yes, good morning. I was actually out hiking last week, and it's funny that you guys are talking about Lone Star ticks. I've been hiking at Seton Creek Historic Preserve, and I ended up getting covered in probably 10 to 11 Lone Star ticks. And I posted it on my Facebook page to my friends, and somebody said, "Oh, well, Lone Star ticks don't carry Lyme disease." I was just curious, paying attention to Lyme disease, and I have a whole bag of the Lone Star ticks. What would I need to do or what should I do just to be on the lookout?
Yeah, sure. Dr. Hartman and Dr. Clark.
Well, if you were actually bitten by any of the ticks, you can save the ticks and send them to Dr. Clark for testing. We typically treat people with a combination of doxycycline and either metronidazole or tinidazole. So it treats the multiple infections that can be transmitted from the bite of a tick and Lyme disease. Dr. Clark, what kind of testing?
Yeah, people can send ticks to me at UNF. We test ticks regularly for research purposes. What we tell people is we can't test these things quickly enough to provide information that's meaningful necessarily for treatment purposes, but we do add to the research data. And we always tell people to save the ticks. That's our campaign as well. And the thing that people need to know is that Lyme is one thing we need to be concerned about, but there are several potential infections in these ticks. And so Lyme is only one of many things to be aware of.
And get in touch with Dr. Clark, Melissa, at the same time. People can do their part on social media. The hashtag is take a bite out of Lyme.
Yes, or hashtag Lyme Disease Challenge. Mm-hmm. Our website is www.lymedisease.org. And Florida Lyme Disease Association is www.flda.org.
All right. May is Lyme Disease Awareness Month. Thank you so much for sharing this really important health information. Dr. Kerry Clark, professor at UNF, Dr. Shirley Hartman, and Melissa Bell, president of the Florida Lyme Disease Association. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, and we'll pass out the rest of these limes here in a second. Sure. We'll be right back.
Spend some time in the square.
an online venue for local artists. WJCT invites you to vote for your favorite submission. Vote now through the end of the month. To learn more about the Square and to place your vote, visit wjct.org/thesquare.
On the next Fresh Air, writer-director John Carney, whose films include Once and Begin Again, tells us about his new film, Sing Street. Also, Maria Torpakai, who grew up in the tribal areas of Pakistan, tells us how she had to dress as a boy in order to become an athlete. She now lives in Canada and is the only female in international squash competition ranked in the top 50. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Genesis Morales lives in Texas. She's the daughter of Mexican immigrants.
My mom always explained to me that if she had the opportunity to go to college and get a better job so she doesn't have to be working in a factory all night long, she would.
She'd always worked hard in school, but it all came down to one thing her junior year.
All of our hard work was put down in a number.
Next time on Reveal, what's in store for students of color in the Lone Star State?
Thursday at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Well, this week is Public Service Recognition Week, a time set aside to honor America's public servants. And all this week on the show, we're putting the spotlight on local folks who help this community in so many ways. Today, we're focusing on international affairs as we welcome Uli Decker, Director of Education and Community Outreach at the World Affairs Council of Jacksonville. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
And you had to come all the way downstairs to do this. Of course, you're in our building.
I did.
When we talk about public service, one way that people serve the public is through nonprofit work. The World Affairs Council is one such example. And the focus on international affairs you've brought to the First Coast is extraordinary. You have so many great speakers coming to town all the time. Tell us a little bit about your efforts.
Yeah, thank you so much, Melissa. So we are probably best known in the community for our speakers. We have a monthly program in partnership with the University of North Florida, and you've interviewed several of our speakers here on this show. We have brought names such as Bob Woodward, Fareed Zakaria, David Brooks, and most recently, Steve Wozniak.
Of Apple, sure.
Of Apple
fame,
yes.
That was a huge event.
Yes,
huge
event. Very well attended. So your listeners are probably familiar with that part of our programming. But in addition to that, we also have a very vibrant and fast-growing education outreach, where we work with public high schools in the area across four school districts in Clay, Duval, Nassau, and St. John's County. And also with the colleges and universities here in the area.
And how do you see this work fitting into the whole mission of public service?
Mm-hmm. So the service that we provide is global education. And so working with the public sector, with the schools here on engaging students in world affairs and enabling them to better engage with the world around them.
Yeah.
On a national and international level.
And I would think that's pretty rewarding.
It
is, and raising everyone's IQ points every day as you come in and do your work, you and your colleagues, it's got to be pretty gratifying.
It's great, yeah. And I just actually attended a year-end celebration with some students in Hilliard. We actually spent a wide area on the First Coast with many different schools, and it is great to see the interest in the students, but also the joy and excitement that comes with coming to our programs.
Well, thanks for all you do. It's great to have you in our building and learn about your work all the time. The World Affairs Council of Jacksonville. Check them out online and become a supporter. Uli Decker is Director of Education and Community Outreach there. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Melissa.
And in a moment, you don't know Jack, but you will soon. We'll tell you about a new magazine.
The small town of Austin, Indiana, is still dealing with an HIV outbreak fueled by prescription drug abuse. Part of the problem? Getting access to medications that help people quit, like Suboxone.
The Suboxone is what most of our people want. they're actually buying it illegally on the street to try to quit themselves. That's how desperate they are.
Revisiting Austin, Indiana later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
The first thing you do when you get to a new place is search for the familiar. Golden arches, leather jackets, facial hair. But what if you look around and realize that maybe you're a little further afield than you thought? On the Next Step Judgment, Stranger in a Strange Land. Storytelling with a beat. Do not miss it.
Sundays at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
WJCT and Baptist Health are pleased to announce that Amy Robach, news anchor of ABC's Good Morning America, will be this year's afternoon keynote speaker at Girls Day Out, September 17, 2016, Hyatt Regency Riverfront Hotel. Amy is also a breast cancer awareness advocate and author of My Breast Cancer Journey, From Fighter to Thriver. For more information or for tickets, log on to wjct.org/girlsdayout.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, a new magazine is launching this week in the city celebrating Jacksonville's cultural core. Keep your eyes out for Jack on newsstands today and also online. Matt Pittman of Jacksonville.com is here with all the details as we get to know Jack.
Hi.
Good morning.
I'm super excited to be back on radio.
Good
I
to
told
have
you
it.
That in the email. I was like, I did radio for 9 years. So I was
yes, here you are again.
Back.
You're natural, right? Right at home.
Something like that.
Okay, well, tell us about Jack. You brought a few copies. I'm looking at my brand new copy of Jack magazine. It looks great. The premiere issue out this week.
It's out today. You can officially pick it up all over the urban or cultural core, as we're calling it. But the magazine is pretty much to focus on all the cool activities that we have going on in Riverside, Avondale, San Marco, the Brooklyn area, downtown Springfield. So all the cool things that are going on. And what's great about this magazine is it's a restaurant guide. It's an entertainment guide. So bi-weekly, you'll be able to kind of pick it up, look at it, see what's going on. And the restaurant guide is broken up into areas. So if you happen to be in the Avondale area, you're walking around, you can pick it up and look and say, hey, I've never been there. I don't know that place.
Uh-huh.
And now you get to go.
This has a real geographic footprint, too.
It does.
This is distributed in Riverside, Avondale, Five Points, Brooklyn, downtown Springfield,
right,
San Marco, Murray Hill.
I think you covered it.
Yeah, that is the area of town you're focusing on.
And that's all it's going to be. The idea, too, is to pick this up and to know that you're within like a $5 Uber ride or the Riverside, Avondale trolley. You can jump on that and check out all these areas. Mm-hmm. It's not going to cost you a lot. And so it's just, there's so much going on in this area. I live in this area. I live in Riverside off Stockton. So I know I see it every single day. Something new popping up, a new restaurant. Or meeting people that have been there for years, like restaurants like Richard's and White Way Deli and all these places that have been in Jacksonville for so long. It's kind of a cool place to showcase them.
And so how did Morris Communications see this opportunity, Jacksonville.com, to come out with this new offering? It's a physical magazine, and there's a digital version.
That's right.
Too.
You can go to jack.jacksonville.com. Everything's fully loaded up, so if you aren't able to pick it up. But the idea kind of came as conversations begun about this area, about all the cool stuff that's going on. Unity Plaza jumped on right off the bat. Of course, they've got so much stuff going on with the new restaurants like Spraga opening up and Hobnob and all the cool stuff they have going on. So we thought it was a great idea to come down and kind of feature all these cool, interesting people. And as I see you flipping through, you can see Jack Schwachman over. He's
owner of Brew and Five Points. He's on the cover.
That's right, of course.
You had to put a guy named Jack on the cover.
We were looking for a Jack. And so we threw Jack on the cover. But as you flip through, you can see we showcased in the premiere issue a bunch of cool people that represent different areas. Right there, you're looking at, I won't butcher Jackson's last name, but Jackson is one of the owners and partners over at Grape and Grain Cafe in San Marco. So I went over there. He made me some of his custom cocktails. So I featured that in the premiere issue as well.
Very nice.
Sunray, of course, so unique to our area. Sunray Cinema over in Five Points, very unique. You can go over there, and they're going to be showcased. And hopefully, the way it looks in each issue of Jack, you'll get to see some of the cool things that they have going on.
Well, it's exciting to see this new magazine debuting today. Look for more than 200 locations across all of those neighborhoods, or visit them online. It's Jack. Out every 2 weeks.
Every 2 weeks. Every Wednesday, you're going to be able to pick it up. And special thanks to everybody who jumped on board for the premiere issue. Pick it up. It's cool stuff.
Matt Pittman, always good to see you. Thanks for
being
here.
Good to see you, too. Thank you.
Well, that's our show today. Thanks so much for tuning in. And thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme, composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Subscribe to the Daily Podcast on iTunes and Stitcher and watch the show. You can check out the video on demand segment of that Lyme disease challenge later today at tvjax.com. Next on Die and Ream, Senator Ted Cruz drops out of the presidential race and Senator Bernie Sanders wins Indiana. Guest host Lisa Desjardins talks with a panel of guests about what Tuesday's primary results mean for the 2016 race. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.